Hello, this is Tom Hodge. I think most of you know that I'm also the chief investment officer at PTI.
We're live.
Hello, and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Jim Lawler doing something over there on the board. SP Future up now 9, NASDAQ Futures down 37. It's after a pretty big move up yesterday in the Dow, and not so really so much for the rest of the market. Do we have Professor Liu?
Yes, good morning, sir.
Do. How are you, bud?
Sirs.
What's the good word?
I'm good. Did you guys get a good look at the Northern Lights the other day?
Actually, from the burbs, I have a picture off Audrey's deck. She sent me a picture that you can see because she doesn't have any light behind her. It's kind of a wetlands or something. It was unreal. I mean, it looked like this big pink thing, like something out of Star Trek, for God's sake.
We could only see a slight glow here in Denver because of the ambient light, but up at the Mountain House, my neighbors sent some absolutely spectacular pictures of this red, and I mean red, sky. It looked like a sunrise, except it was to the north, highlighting mountains and trees and all that. It was quite something.
Yeah, I mean, well, this wasn't that big because there was some ambient light, but pretty. By the way, are you on the list to be one of the clappers and smilers behind the president when he signs these things now?
No. Oh. I'd be happy to be there, though. I mean, it's a victory, so I'll take
what
it.
What kind of victory?
It's a victory over the, the Democrats who were shutting the government down.
Any victory over the Democrats is good?
Yep.
Why?
Yep, at this stage, yes. Because that party has basically declared war on everything that this administration is trying to do, as I said, Trump is not one of my all-time favorite people. I'm at the point now where I'm absolutely committed to frustrating anything the Democrats want to do.
So you want to cut the insurance off for everybody?
No, that was the Democrats that were going
to
do that.
No, he's cutting them off at the end of the year, and they didn't want to.
Oh no, that was the Democrat bill that did that, and the Democrats voted for that. They put that in place.
So they
put that system in place.
So you're all in on whatever this guy does.
Not everything, but I'm all in on this. Anything that frustrates the
I think they're going to get blamed Democrat. For this more than the Democrats. By the way, to shut down.
I don't think so. Why? How can you blame the Republicans for it when the Democrats are taking credit for it now because they're screaming at their people for caving, which indicates that they had control of it all along.
Some are. But I mean, the news.
Not some.
The news out there, Lou, is so disgusting to me. Yesterday we had, if you listen to any financial show, you're going to listen to some, I'm going to say, moron, talking about how the signing of this bill caused the market to go up yesterday, the Dow. But if anybody were to actually look at something, you think if you're going to get on national TV and you're going to look at something and you're going to say something, that you actually would look and see, wait a minute, what's in the Dow? Now, the Dow is a price-weighted index where $1 move in any stock in there is like a 7, 6, 90 something. Say $7 move in the index. And now you have Goldman Sachs was up $30. You had J.P. Morgan was up a chunk, and some other bank stock in here was up. All the new, whatever you want to call them, that were going to dinner at the White House last night, those stocks were to the moon. What kind of deal do you think they're cutting to cut? You think you're part of this group? I got news for you, buddy. You're not.
No, I don't. I don't think I'm part of that group.
So I mean, I've never seen a more single targeted group advance on people that we're going to have dinner with a president in my life ever. I mean, what is he doing?
Well, that's just because you're looking for it now. The same thing happened with the. Well, actually,
I'm sure it was worth under. Don't say it. It was worth under Biden. I just don't remember it.
You weren't looking for it.
No, because it didn't happen.
I would disagree, but in any event,
I'm saying this is. But then fast forward to the city here, where this guy wants to put a head tax on a city that's losing businesses as fast as they can. Where are we finding these people? What is going on?
Well, I mean. You and I had this discussion in 2016.
Yeah.
When we were, when I was referring to President Trump as Captain Underpants, and which I still think is a perfectly adequate nickname, or moniker. We were talking about this in 2016, where we were saying, how did we end up with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump as our two candidates?
My mother used to bitch about Bush and Kerry.
Well,
that was probably better than this.
The irony and the craziness of it is that the Republicans in 2016 ran a very, very strong bench, and had very highly qualified by anybody's standards, highly qualified people that were in the mix for the presidential nomination. And then you had somebody that we were widely regarding as kind of a lunatic. And the lunatic didn't just clear the field. He swept the table off and reset it. And so the point that I was making then and the point that I'm making now is that he tapped into something that I think the Democrats are starting to tap into now. With their people, a populist, total frustration with government. You're expressing the same thing that most of the Donald Trump supporters the loud ones that I read on social media or that I see on social media are expressing as well, which is a total frustration with a government that seems to have ignored them. And that seems to move in the direction of either progressive elites or conservative elites who are out of touch with the needs and issues.
Well, they're in touch with themselves, boy. They're in touch with themselves. They're enriching themselves more than anybody's ever had.
So the question I've got is this just, and I, my personal opinion, and you know this too, my personal opinion is that this is something that's been going on for decades. We're just getting a better look at it now, and we have a much, it's much like the situation with our media. I submit that the mainstream media has always controlled and focused their editorial intensity on things that were important to them and shaped our national conversations. We're just a lot more aware of it now, and we have alternatives.
Well, I get all the stuff from this Quora stuff, and I read it. A lot of it I read because they have so many more statistics. People have no jobs, I guess, because they'll dig into like baseball and football and whatever. But I've read probably five or six pretty interesting, pieces from people overseas regarding the Trump administration. And virtually every one of them, Lou, does not even address Trump. They want to know what's happened to the American people that can elect people like this. They want to know
this is coming from a continent that has become virulently anti-Semitic.
No, I'm talking about a couple of them actually are from Australia. They're all over. I'm just saying
Australia has become virulently anti-Semitic.
I'm saying you could criticize the person immediately without even knowing who the hell they are. I'm saying the issue is how did we get like this? Where all of a sudden you can't count on a treaty, you can't count on. I'm talking about somebody else's point of view.
I understand. I routinely discount what I see from the so-called European elites.
I didn't say they were elite. I'm just saying there's a thread of truth in there.
Okay, a thread of truth. I'm sure there is frustration with. I know there's frustration in Europe because I was in the UK recently, and you know we get this question from some of the folks there as to what is happening in the United States, and I said, well, we're not like you, and we never have been. You know, what you're seeing in the United States right now, the kind of boil over of discussion that's going on, is a country that has a legitimate free speech tradition and still does, as opposed to what's happening in the UK, for example, to take the most fundamental basic right that we assume we have, which is freedom of speech.
Except we really don't anymore, but
yeah, we do. Especially when you compare us to places like Australia or the UK or even the EU. And if you basically try to express this to people who are EU or European and say you're seeing the kind of explosion of a populist movement that you guys have here, but you suppress it. We're not suppressing ours. And that's why you're seeing this kind of boil over in our national discourse.
Some of it looped. I get this weird feeling, and it's this serious question. Something is wrong here, and we talk about it on the show all the time. I mean, we have over years. In terms of, I don't want to be one of these people that says, oh, if our education system was only better or something, some esoteric thing like, yeah, you'd love it to be better, but there's nothing you can do tomorrow. And you know, this when I think back to the 2016 deal, and I look at, you know, Trump had been on TV with the "you're fired." It's a TV show. It's not reality. It's not anything like that. And all of a sudden, the Republican Party, and you're right, they had a pretty good bench. There were some people there I thought were pretty qualified. They let everybody on this 9 or 8 person debate, and they let this buffoon in the middle insult the crap out of everybody and make it a big TV show. And if you're
what do you mean let?
Well, I'm saying that's sort of a whatever the way the thing was set up, it wasn't
he was on there because he got more votes than anybody else. That's why he was on.
Okay, but when there were still 8 people running, he hadn't got the votes yet.
Well, actually, the polls. He was
okay.
Was
what I'm saying
is polls. That's what got him his entree.
Well, what I'm trying to say here is, just because the guy is a buffoon on TV, we're way past the stage of having these guys write down 400 words about what they're going to do and anybody actually read it. I'm clumsily trying to get to the point where we don't zero in on any of the actual. In other words, Bill Stevenson could never run. Again, Franklin Roosevelt could never run because they actually wrote stuff. They actually did stuff. I mean, we're talking about it. It's become a TV show. I could put it nicely and say that the skill set you need now to get there is not the skill set you want in there necessarily. I mean, Trump is pretty good at insulting the guy next to him. Some people love that. You and I don't. We don't insult each other. I mean, but some people absolutely love that. My guy is insulting the other guy, and it's become not a presidency. It's like shock TV.
We had this discussion about 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, but it's getting worse.
So let's back up. The Republicans ran an eminently qualified, rational expert on public policy in 2012. He was a smart, thoughtful, articulate, measured politician who by every means and by every measure should have appealed to people from the center to the right. He was a genuinely good guy. His name was Romney.
Yeah.
And you know what happened to
him?
By
the way, I was all set to vote for him.
I was all set to vote for him. I voted for him too. Do you know what happened to him? He was demonized as a bigot, as a woman hater, as a racist, and painted
and compared
that
to this
way.
Guy, he's a saint and any one of those things.
Well, but this is the point. There were a lot of people, yours truly included, who said after that election, we're not playing by, because the point of the election, the Republicans finally realized after 2012, is not to put a intelligent, thoughtful, you know, guy in there.
By the way, you're saying the same thing I'm saying, just a different way.
It's going to rationally appeal to people. What you need, because the point of the Democrats' point was we're interested in power, and we'll say anything to get power. And they did, and they won. And at that point, the Republican faithful said, essentially, you know what? If it takes a bomb-throwing lunatic to get our point across, then we're going to go with the bomb-throwing lunatic. And that's what we got.
Well, it's interesting because people that, I'm going to say our age, the gentleman's going to be on after us, Andrew, last week, and Andrew and I got into it a little bit, and not into it, just a discussion. I said, you know, if the Democrats want to play ball like this, they got to up their game. I said, if you're going to be, if this guy in the House shuts down the House, and the message for the people there is that the Republican guys have essentially shut down Congress. And I said, you know, the Democrats have to show up and they have to make a scene. And Andrew says, oh, no, they're there. They're willing. I go, Andrew, you're missing the point, buddy. It's all about all whatever how many 200 Democrats on the lawn trying the door and not get in. It's all about drama now. It's not about any. I know that they and the Republicans are willing to come back at a moment's notice. I know that part, but that's not the world we're in now. You got to have guys going up there every one of them like trying the door or something. It's got to be something that people can look at and say, man, these guys are trying to get in and do a job for us. And I'm not even good at this, Lou, but I'm better than these guys are.
Well, what is happening or what has happened is that you got a guy who can run the Democratic playbook, that 2012 Democratic playbook. The Republicans got a guy who can run the 2012 Democratic playbook better than they can right now. And it took, and we can have a separate discussion on this. It took basically a rigged election in 2020 to knock him out. I'm actually the way things are.
I don't
working
think that
out,
was rigged at all. But go ahead. We won't.
Well, I know you don't. I know you don't. But
any more rigged than any other one has ever been. Let's put it that way.
I don't think you can look at the revelations that we've seen since then to say that thing was not rigged. But that's all right. The way it's worked out, you know, we ended up with a rutabaga in the White House, and or a guy with a rutabaga for a brain in the White House. And you know, the country didn't collapse.
What do you think this guy's gonna look like 2 years from now if he's still there?
I think he's gonna look a lot better than Joe Biden.
Well, I think he's sinking worse, but I hope I'm wrong. I don't want him sinking.
No. In any event, we didn't, the country survived, and we now have a more effective.
What do you mean by survived?
I mean it survived.
Well,
we didn't collapse.
We have tremendous amounts of collapse in just about every area. Absolutely.
I don't think so.
Look at somebody trying to pay a medical bill, for God's sake. Look at CPI.
We have many of the same problems that we've been having for decades, but the country continues to run and continues to be, by the way, the leader in the world in terms of economic prosperity and living standard and everything else.
I mean, in terms of where we're at, you're right. In terms of direction, boy, total difference.
I hear you. My point is that the guy who's come in after being out in the wilderness for 4 years, the guy who's come back is a much more effective president in terms of
you don't have a problem with him carving up the economy for his people. This is absolutely. You're the one who told me about the fascist system we're going into. Now you're okay with it?
I'm not okay with it. That's one of the things that I'm concerned about is the alignment of business and government, and the swing that we've seen, but in the last 3 years in terms of how that, you know, how that's meshing up. But these guys that are in charge right now are not nearly as bad as the people that they replaced in terms of doing that. And I, do I like that direction? No.
What do you think happened last night at the dinner? What do you think was carved up at the dinner last night? What information was given out that you and I don't have?
I don't think anything was carved up at the dinner last night. Do you have evidence that there was?
Evidence. Lou, I watch stuff. I see the rally in
Tom, can you point to some insider trading or some other information that you've got that was discussed at the dinner last night or at any of these dinners?
I've seen gold up has led
to some kind of illegal activity.
I've seen gold up 6% in 2 days when somebody says we're never going to get the October numbers, which means you and I aren't going to get them, Lou. Somebody's got them, and they don't look so hot inflation-wise. People are betting big dough on this stuff, and if you don't see it, you're not looking. Now, can I find evidence that you can take to court? No, but I can sure.
Well, I'm looking at anything, any correlation. I mean, I don't like the fact
you don't think think that Goldman Sachs was up $30 yesterday because people think they're going to get something last night.
Do you have? Can you point to something that was said last night that caused that raise?
I'm talking about this is people's impression of what's going on. We're carving things up.
Yeah, and so see, as somebody who deals with this in terms of, okay, this is your impression. This is your I would call it prejudice or bias.
No, it's not.
Then show me something that says this is what's happened.
Okay, we have IBM. I've been talking all year long about IBM, and the stock has gone up, up, up. And I'm sitting there going, "Boy, you know these guys. I know they're doing pretty decent, but what's going on?" And Kevin sends something out. Guess what? IBM has been making all this money from the Chinese, putting together all the infrastructure for watching their own people and watching their people here. That's our company that's doing that over there. And then we have the president bombasting constantly with this NVIDIA. We're going to give him chips, the other chips. The other article, Kevin, this is Kevin sending his stuff out. And he goes, we're not sending him a chip, but we're allowing the Chinese to rent space on the chips here. For God's sake, Lou, why do you think these stocks are going up?
And how does that affect Morgan Stanley's stock price?
I wasn't there, but I'm saying when this stuff happens, why do you invite only a few people? Goldman Sachs is at a great spot in this country for decades.
I'm saying for one thing, you only invite a few people because the dining room only holds a few people.
Wait till he gets the ballroom, he'll be okay with it.
Well, there's a good justification for ballroom right there.
But I'm saying the markets are telling me something. The people that are in the know, I kept seeing Oracle up, 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 and all of a sudden. Guess what? Oracle ends up with, what is it? They're going to end up with TikTok? Or a big chunk of TikTok? The market's not wrong, Lou. I just didn't get the memo, and neither did you, or we'd have made some money on it.
Do you think, if you can point again, all of this, I'm holding you to the same standards that I held the people who were screaming that the Biden administration was doing all kinds of other nefarious stuff. I said, show me something that says this goes on.
So do you think I should file a complaint with this Justice Department that I'm seeing some insider trading? Where do you think that goes? That'd be like a fart in church, Lou.
I don't have any reason to believe that this Justice Department would not investigate a legitimate claim. If you had, you could point them to something other than this temporal, you know, kind of connection between, okay, their stock is up, therefore it must be, you know, their stock is up not because people who are paying attention are betting this is going to go up, excuse me, but because they're getting some kind of insider information. We know, because we have examples of it, of insider trading between people in Congress.
Don't say Pelosi. Don't Don't say
I'm not saying it. I'm just saying people in Congress. Okay, I'm being generic. That's, Pelosi was a prime offender,
That's not even on the same page. That's like saying somebody uses an illegal block versus somebody else brings a knife on the field with them. Front running an announcement from like the Fed or the president is much different than knowing over the next 5 years some company's going to do well.
Well, I was under the impression that Pelosi had front run a bunch of stuff, but it doesn't matter. We know that it's this kind of thing has been going on with members of Congress for some time, and it hits. I think it hits both parties.
Oh, well, Dick Cheney was the dear departed Dick Cheney was probably the guy who started it.
Well, I know you think that, but where's the proof?
What do you mean? Look, the guy refused to stop trading the Kellogg Brown and Root. He's the guy, the gentleman's agreement that I don't know, was a gentleman's agreement, whatever it was, the people in Congress put their money in a blind trust. He never did. He said, I'm not doing that. Okay. You know these guys that get...
How much money did he make off of?
I have no idea.
Okay.
But I'm saying it used to be that there was a law, and very few people know. If Lou got a cabinet level position and you were ahead of say Donald Luffin and Jarrett, like the SEC guy, you got to sell your stock so you wouldn't be still associated with the place and not pay taxes on it.
Right.
And I'm saying so they essentially said, okay, if you're coming from, who's the guy that came from Chesapeake? The guy that didn't last very long. He was Trump's first term. The guy from the railroad.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he was able to sell his...
The Secretary of State.
No, that was the Exxon guy. That was the Exxon guy, Secretary of State.
Right.
The other guy was transferred. Anyway, those guys get... Somehow they get to sell their stock and not pay taxes on it. So there's no reason for them to still have it and be trading it when they're there. But Cheney was the guy who said, no, I'm not selling it. And he was VP, and he didn't. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if he front ran it or whatever he did. He may have, but the fact is, he didn't do the blind trust sell it thing.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that every day he was using every announcement. I don't think Kellogg Brown and Root moved at all with any kind of an announcement to you, except for asbestos stuff. So I don't think he.
Is my understanding is that's why he said I'm not gonna do it, make an issue out of it. Again. I understand your issues with this stuff and the alignment of these business interests. I don't like the fact that the president's kids and the Secretary of Transportation's kids are out, basically selling influence, or at least selling the appearance of influence. But again, I don't like it. The accusations fly back and forth across the aisle. My impression, and I can point to any number of examples, is that whatever this administration gets accused of doing, the other side has done it 10 times worse.
Well, that's or did it the 10 fact times that worse. It's worse is just your prejudiced view. The fact is, the other side has done it. that's kind of where I'm going with this, Lou. What I'm saying is, I'm looking for a solution. I want the middle class that people always talk about on both sides don't do anything for. I want them to be able to borrow money for their firm the same as other people can borrow money for theirs. I don't want federal help. I don't want Amazon and people and people being able to borrow money less than the inflation rate when nobody else can, which makes people incredibly multi gazillionaires compared to other people. You're right. I was looking for, to be honest. I always wanted somebody from the outside, like a Trump, to shake stuff up. Because I thought both parties, and Carl has taught me this, if you look at your CPI numbers, you look at your labor numbers, you look at everything for the last 25 years, you can't even tell who's president, to be honest with you. I mean, despite,
okay, and so when you get this populist influence... This is what you end up
with. But I kind of hope we got somebody a little smarter and cared about anybody other than himself.
Well, I think I will say this. The the first term, Trump's first term, was problematic in a lot of ways, in large part because he was doing exactly what you said. He was shaking up the establishment, and he had people turning at every turn, saying, "I don't want this." You know, people who worked for him, people who were in the executive branch, subverting a lot of what he was trying to do, and creating all kinds of problems for him. Plus, he was the victim of a soft coup attempt, and that hamstrung a lot of what he was trying to accomplish. He's a lot smarter now. I think the people he's got around him are better. I think they're more competent. I see indications that we are doing some things that I didn't see under Biden. We might have seen some of it under Obama, but it was not really clear. And that is the formulation of and I'm a foreign policy guy focused guy, a formulation of something like a grand strategy. And a sort of a rational approach to dealing with issues that confront the U.S. and its allies around the world, and a kind of overreaching, this is the direction we want to take the world, or we want to take us in the world, and steps to promote that are logically consistent in the Caribbean, in the Pacific, in the North Atlantic, in Ukraine, in the Middle East. And if that's the case, and it looks like it is the case to me anyway, if that's the case, then I think we need to sort of step back and reassess the nature of the people that we've got in power. The problem, the reaction to Donald Trump's election in 2016 was, I think, totally unprecedented. And basically, as I said, I've said this many times on this show, Trump's superpower is getting people to reveal themselves and sort of show their true colors. The reaction that you saw in 2016, I think, pulled the curtain back on what power politics had been doing in Washington and New York and L.A. for a decade. And it wasn't pretty, and the people in power didn't like it, and the reaction that you've seen to Trump is hysterical.
It's not, Lou. I don't know. I mean, everybody's not, everything everybody does is wrong, and I think the guy's right on a lot of stuff, but it doesn't. I mean, there's a right and a wrong way to do things, and I think it's just the wrong way to do stuff. And I look at him, and I look at the mayor of Chicago. I see the same person. The exact same person, absolutely. The people around you, an ounce of loyalty is worth a pound of talent. Everything's my way or the highway. A total lack of any knowledge of anything they're doing stuff on.
I would disagree. I would say Marco Rubio, to use an example, or what's his face, the Secretary of Transportation. These guys seem to be pretty smart, and they seem to know what they're doing.
You can look at the couple that maybe that way, and in Chicago you get a different view. When there was a guy on today, he's been arrested twice from DOGE. He's a meter reader, but he just happens to be Hispanic. He's a citizen, been here for his whole life, but he's been arrested, he's been yanked in twice because he's Hispanic.
Okay, well, that's okay. And you know my take on that, but I mean this administration has had some major foreign policy successes, and I mean that you can't deny that. As I said, I see implications of a grand strategy, or glimmers, not implications, but a glimmer of grand strategy that is starting to move
foreign
policy.
Be 15 companies that give the guy money personally.
No. It's I think the companies are a means to an end.
What's the end? I guess the bottom line is we have some people on the show, very, very, obviously, I love talking to you guys. They somehow or another, and I've kind of known about this guy for years, if we just let people let him alone, somewhere at the base there's this incredibly moral and intelligent guy. It's really working for the lower for the lower class of society and for world order. I don't see it, Lou. I just don't see it. I don't know how you guys do, to be honest.
Well,
there isn't a shred of morals in the guy. Look what's coming out of these Epstein tapes.
Nothing's come out of the Epstein tapes. What's come out of the Epstein tapes?
The fact that they didn't read the one yesterday.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
They were useless. They thought, you know, Epstein said, well, he's known about this. Yeah, he did know about it. That's why he kicked Epstein out of Mar-a-Lago.
He kicked Epstein out because they had a bad deal. He screwed Epstein on a deal.
No.
And Epstein was pissed
off. I don't think that's the history, and it wasn't the history before he became president. I mean, right.
I want the dude to do a good job, Lou. I actually do. Mm-hmm. I just don't see when everybody says if everybody just quit bugging him, somehow we have this very intelligent, well-read, moral person. And I'm saying, who are you looking at?
Tom, I have never accused the president of being particularly moral, at least with regard to things like marriage and
young girls,
you know, his relationship with his wives and women around him generally. I don't think there's an issue on that.
Does that reflect?
No. I mean, when I say there's an issue, I don't think there's an issue. I don't think there's much debate about that. Okay, in the way he acted when he was married, when he was younger, and the way he acted around women. I don't think there's any particular issue about that. We know who he is. We knew who Bill Clinton was, and yet he remains a scion of the Democratic Party. We know who Joe Biden was.
The only thing and was he got good about Clinton anyway. Was he was able to work across the aisle.
Well, I mean Trump is. I think Trump could work across the aisle if the aisle was willing to work with him, but they're not. And they are trying to focus. These are people who are basically power hungry. I suspect they're on both sides. But right now, you've got an element that is power hungry, that cannot deal with him. And it's not
a question. Is anybody more power hungry than him?
Schumer.
Oh, come on. He's going nowhere. He knows it.
Brennan. Comey.
They're all sort of in a. Here's the thing. The part I have.
I mean, I'm listening to people who engaged in the coup attempt.
Well, here's what my issue is. I don't know how we got off on it. I mean, Ricky asked me last week. He's the kid who helps us out 2 days a week on the show, and a really nice kid. He asked me about, you know, what is my concern with Trump, and I said, you know, Ricky, it probably comes down to my training on the trading floor. And I said, if you see somebody that is honest and like everything they do, they never renege on a trade and whatever. If you see them in some other walk of life, it's been my history that all of a sudden, whatever it is, you can count on that person to act like they've always acted in such a way where they're going to be honest. They're going to say it's their fault if it's their fault. So, but if somebody's just the opposite, you can't put them in a position and hope that somehow or another they're going to react better this time, because people don't change their spots.
So I absolutely agree with you. And I will tell you that for a lot of people who voted for the president, not necessarily me, but for a lot of people, that's a feature, not a bug. Do you know what I mean by that?
Sort of. Explain it.
What I mean is that's what they voted for, because we had the nice guy. We had the moral guy. And he got waxed. He got called a racist and a homophobe and every other awful name that you could think of.
But you had guys.
And the lesson from 2012 was, if you put people like that up there, it doesn't matter that they're moral and thoughtful and all this. They're going to get tagged anyway.
But someday we might as well get somebody like that. But someday we better get back to that, Lou. I think.
Well, I agree with you. And I come out again as one of the things that they used to teach in the military, I assume we still are, is the importance of character. And that because character, which is what you just referenced, character cuts across everything. Your character permeates what you do. And so, you know, whatever the decision is, whenever the you know, things have hit the fan and you've got to make hard decisions, it's your character that's going to inform how you act, and you want people with good character. I still believe that, but our body politic is not set to produce that.
You know what, Lou? I'm with you. You grab like the least, you know, you try and find out what the least worst is. I just hope that someday we're better than that.
Our body politic right now is not producing that, or at least it's not. We may get lucky and get somebody like that.
How deep do you think it is? Is it in the school system?
We're not testing for that.
Is it in the school system? Is it in social media? Where's the flaw?
I think it's definitely part of it's the education system. Listen, I don't know if you've been following the kind of internal fighting that's been going on in certain aspects of the Republican influencer movement with people like Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly and
to be honest, I watch all the stuff I'm zeroed in on the stuff that affects the markets, because that's what I do for people. So okay. I really don't branch off and unless somebody sends me something, I really don't listen to the other crap, honestly.
So this is a struggle that's going on within the conservative movement right now. Not so much within the Republican Party, but definitely within the conservative movement. You have finally a realization that is starting to hit people, and you started seeing it maybe 10 years ago when you started seeing the rise of complaints about the general quality of men that women were being faced with, and the idea that what's happening to our male population, they're getting sullen, they're withdrawing, they're not fun, they're not socially adapted, da da da. This is starting to boil up now in a more direct way, where we are seeing the appeal of people who, for example, are trying to rewrite history and say things. And I think it's just part of a general overall rebellion against any kind of standards. But we're starting to say things like, you know what? The real cause of World War II was not Hitler. Hitler really was just a nationalist trying to protect the German people. All of that stuff with the Holocaust was just an internal reaction of German politics, and it didn't reflect anything bigger than that, and it really wasn't that big a deal anyway. Now, for you and I to listen to that and hear that, our immediate reaction would be, whoever is saying that is nuts and totally, totally distorted worldview. But there is a sizable element, and it seems to be focusing on young men with a certain mindset. There is a sizable element within the conservative movement that has jumped on that. It has a corresponding group in the far left of our body politic that basically says the Jews are the enemy, and we should be getting rid, we should be disassociating with them, we should stop supporting Israel. That particular mentality has a corresponding link in the far right, because you can it's like a horseshoe, you know, sure, the far right and the far left.
They far right and far left are pretty much the same in a lot of ways, aren't they?
They bend back toward each other. But this is starting, this is rearing its head now, and there's this huge fight in the sort of the influencer intellectual and elements of the conservative movement and within their influencer movement, where you've got a bunch of people that are basically saying, you know, Hitler wasn't that bad a guy. He was just misunderstood.
And that
element, as I said, has a corresponding group in the far left that is, you know, is there, as far as I'm concerned, they're just anti-Semitic. They want the Jews identified as the bad guys and everything. And you see that in this kid that just got elected mayor of New York.
The Jews somehow or another they've always been, and this goes back to the Middle Ages, where...
Oh, it goes back, goes back to the dark ages.
I'm talking about in terms of the money side of it, the Jews were always the bad guys because the Catholic Church wouldn't allow their people to charge interest.
The same thing with Islam.
Yeah, so if you wanted to borrow money, you had to borrow from the Jews. So they ended up usually with more money than other people. So when you talk about people with money, the term Jews came together. But Lou, can I comment on what you said earlier about the World War II thing? I think this is part of education too. And we've had a couple people on that are I'm saying you can go back, and I would say more eloquently than most, because I've studied this and this is my field. I could probably go back and go through the Treaty of Versailles. And William Kennedy did this as best in his book, Freedom from Fear. And I could look at the stuff in there that didn't have to be there, where 90% of all the world's oil reserves were on one side of the table and the other one they left. And the big circle bleep that I've talked about, where the Germans didn't have enough money to pay their reparations, so they were selling bonds over here. The money was going to Germany. They were paying the French and Germans, and the French and Germans were paying us. So we're essentially stealing money from our people, having it go through this circle coming back to our government. This stuff is kind of always going on. So I think I can make a very strong case that some of the rest of the world, John Maynard Keynes was the economist at Versailles, we pushed Germany, the rest of the world, even though the rest of the world was in bad shape too, pushed Germany into a position where it was almost predictable that somebody would rise up from that mess and be a strong man of some kind. Now, that doesn't mean that we created Hitler and we caused him to kill 6 million people.
No.
There is some logic to how it got started.
But you can't
go further than that and say we're the guys who killed the Jews.
Just like the same
mentality. Can I say
that
halfway decently or not?
Yeah, the same mentality that said that the Japanese were not the aggressors at Pearl Harbor.
Oh, yeah, but all you FDR
how do you force them into it?
All you have to do is show whoever says that. And I've had people tell me, "Well, if we wouldn't cut them off the oil, show them pictures of what they did in Nanking, for God's sake."
Oh, I know.
We didn't do that.
I know. And so, in any event, this element of these. And as I said, the original point I was getting.
Have you ever agreed this much?
You're seeing a lock into this element. In the conservative side, they're focusing on young men. It's also present on the left, but with young men, although the left seems to be mostly younger women and middle-aged women, but that are so far off the spectrum on this. But in the conservative group, it's young men. And the point that gets made is you have basically demonized, our culture has basically spent the last 30 years, maybe 40, demonizing young white males and making them the focus of everything that's bad, starting in kindergarten and going all the way up through 12th grade and into college. And when you do that, what do you think the reaction is going to be culture-wide? And this is what you get. You get a bunch of just...
I agree. I mean, you and I aren't supposed to agree this much. Besides, we got to save 5 minutes for the veteran stuff we've been talking about for a week. But
all right. So let me
just say real quick. You don't know. You have no idea how much I agree with you. But I think a lot of it has to do with the economics. I mean, Thursday nights are a night to go out, and you know we have a couple of drinks over at the place. And when there's a lot of young guys that come by now and sit with us for whatever reason, As you know, I'm very interested in just about everybody, and I listen to these guys. Lou, it's not a question of better or worse. They are so much different than me coming out of school. First of all, I was good at sports. I burned off energy doing that. I wasn't good at it, but I loved to play. The world was my oyster. I came from a family that didn't have a lot of dough, but I had no debt. There isn't a job I could have said to the guy every day, up yours, and walked out the door. The world was my oyster, even though I had nothing. My attitude was, if you don't like me, the next guy will. I mean, I was not Trump-like attitude, but I had an ego that I'm going to work hard, I'm going to do a good job, and somebody's going to want me. And these kids see they're never going to own a house, They're never going to own a car. They're already working for some, you know, OCC or CBOE. When I was on the CBOE, I was on the trading floor. Every day I couldn't wait to get there. It was competitive. The people around me I liked. It was funny as hell. You know, it was dangerous money-wise. But these kids, they're never going to trade. They're never going to work for a firm that trades. They see zero future of themselves when they're 25 years old. It doesn't make me better or you better. The world was just different. Well, and God help them if they got any debt on student loans.
Yeah,
it's not even. It's almost like God. You need a shot of testosterone, buddy, or something. You know.
And so this sort of sense of hopelessness, and as I said, being under bombardment by their educational culture. And there's a great piece I'll try to pull it down by a guy called Wokal Distance, and he posted on X about 4 or 5 days ago, and it's gone viral since. But he talked about going into his middle school son's class or elementary school son's class and being bombarded with every kind of woke nonsense, from gay rights flags to, you know, trans rights and all this. And all in Black Lives Matter and everything, all focusing basically on the bad guy here is the white boy who has all the privilege. And he said, somebody coming out of this, by the time he's 12 or 13, is going to be angry. And then you throw in the lack of economic opportunity or the perceived lack of economic opportunity, and you are going to drive, and we are driving people into these extremist outlooks.
It's horrible, Lou. It's horrible.
It is. And so Scott Adams, 5, maybe 8 years ago, said the most anti-American entity in the United States right now is there are teachers' unions, because they have been responsible for the indoctrination.
I don't know where it comes from, Lou, because before COVID, there was a bar up in the Buckingham, right? And I'd pile in there once in a while, just to talk to people and have sassafras, right? There were a couple older dudes in there, older than me, and one guy's big, heavy-set, but big, strong Irish guy, and he goes, I said, what are you doing these days? Well, you know, I'm retired, but my no-good son-in-law basically dashed on my daughter. So a couple days a week, I'm and she's at work, I take care of the two kids. There's two boys, they're like, whatever, 10 and 8 or something. And maybe they weren't even that old, 8 and 6. And he goes, I take them to the park and I do stuff. And he goes, something's wrong with this world. And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, if all of a sudden a couple of the guys get in a snowball fight or they're wrestling or something, they're not, all of a sudden everybody's in outrage. What are they doing that for? We got to drug these kids. He goes, they're just being boys.
Yep.
They want him on drugs because they want to get in a snowball fight. He goes, what's wrong with this world? We did that every day. He goes, what's changed? Who's driving this? This is just a regular guy, not somebody like you who's reading stuff from people or like that. So, it's a regular dude. Goes, what's wrong with being a boy?
So I first became aware of this when my own kids, who were both boys, started creating. Or according to their teachers, were creating behavior issues in class. And my ex-wife, God bless her, who was a special education teacher and who was on top of just about every learning theory you could imagine, said, what do you want us to do? And they said, well, you know, they've got ADHD, so they need to be medicated.
According to these people, every kid's got ADHD. According to these kids,
this was a cultural phenomenon in the 80s and 90s where teachers, mostly female, discovered that, in fact, almost exclusively female, were unhappy that the boys in their class were acting like boys and that it was a problem for them. It was hard work to teach them, to get them to sit still, to get them to pay attention. And so the response was to medicate them. And we started on that track, and my wife at the time said, this is a mistake, and we need to stop this, because what's happening is, and it literally is a, there's a book called The War on Boys, and it's exactly right. It's within our educational system, and this is a result of a widespread educational philosophy that permeated most of our education majors in undergrad and graduate programs. The idea was that boys, and specifically masculinity, was the problem. And so we have to deal with that. And we can medicate it. You literally had these elementary schools effectively prescribing medication for their male students. This tendency has metamorphosized into the whole concept of toxic masculinity and a number of other concepts that, as I said, direct the ire and the blame for most of society's ills to white males in the schools. And you end up, as I said, you end up with a bunch of really angry people coming out of those programs. And if you don't give them the economic opportunities that allow them to say, this was an anomaly, I can ignore this, life is okay. If they're frustrated economically, Tom, then that anger now has a direction.
And I remember talking about a difference. I think it was the third grade. We had a nun or what we did. And it starts to snow, right? And everybody, of course, can't wait to get outside and make snowballs. So a couple of guys go over and sharpen their pencils, right, which is by the window, and they're looking out. So the nun goes, all right, why don't we do this? Why don't we all go out, look out the window, and see how much snow we got? And she goes, it looks to me like there's going to be some good snowball fights on the way home, so why don't we hang in here for another half hour? It'll be 3 o'clock and go have a good time. Talk about a difference, huh?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You would have seen a completely different reaction by somebody who was the product of a modern education degree coming out. And it's anyway, this discussion is going on now in the conservative influencer circles, and people are throwing their hands up saying, where do these guys come from?
Yeah, where did this come from? I don't get it.
And you're starting to see responses like this vocal distance post, and you can find it on Google right now and pull it up and look at it. But you're starting to see the sort of the analysis coming up saying, we built this, our culture built this, our education system built this. My sister, who lives in Minneapolis, is about as far left as you can imagine. She's very progressive, but she has a son, and he is fairly conservative. And she said, I don't understand how this happened. My husband and I are both good, solid Minnesota progressives. And I said, because the education system has radicalized him. He's been told he's the bad guy. And if you sit down and talk to him about it, he'll tell you how he's been the focus
A lot of it, Lou, also is we don't compete anymore. I mean, the reason why you play ball or do something after work, and ladies do it too now, which is great, is because you got a bunch of stress that's worked up during the day, and you blow off your adrenaline by going and playing basketball, handball, or whatever the hell, yoga, or whatever the ladies want to do, or they go play tennis or pickleball, or basketball. Women play everything the guys do now. That's what you do. You don't get online and hate people all night.
No, but I will tell you, excessive competitiveness is a toxic male virtue, according to popular culture.
Boy, the world would be. Our country would not be the way it is if we didn't have some of that.
No, it's absolutely necessary.
Hey, we got to steal 2 minutes from Andrew. What about?
No, I'm not going to steal anymore. I keep stealing Andrew's time.
Well, he can pile on. But what? And Wayne, what did you think of all the veteran stuff we did this week? I thought we did a pretty good job. I don't know if you listened to any of it.
I did. Yeah. No, I mean, you're hitting issues. Like I said, this hits close to home. I've got people close to me who have exactly those issues. It's important to flag it, and it's important to understand the cost that we impose when we tell people we're going to go to war, which is why, I'm one of these guys that says, look, I believe in a useful in that military force is absolutely necessary. It can be highly useful, but you need to understand the cost we impose on our people when we decide we're going to use it.
What last question? This is one I valued when we went for the Iraq 2, when Bush and the guys went in there and did that weapons of mass destruction. There was a guy, and we weren't on the show yet, Lou, but at the time, there was a guy who did an estimate of like $1 trillion, how it was going to cost, trillion and a half to somebody.
I remember this discussion.
Yeah, and my question is, if Now, you know, Bush's guys, the neocons, you know, they whatever. We could argue about them forever. But if what do you suppose would have happened if he would have come out and said, we're going to do this war, but by the way, it's going to cost X. So for the next 3 years, we're putting a 15% surcharge in everybody's taxes.
Yeah.
Do you think we'd have gone?
I mean, reach back. Had Lyndon Johnson done that for Vietnam, Tom? I mean, that was one of the reasons we had such a terrible economy in the 70s.
Yep. Well, that's why we went off the gold standard, and look where that got us. The inflation then, and we're doing it again now. Right.
So yeah. I mean, the economics probably hit more directly and are more visible. And that might be a better motivator to cause people to question whether this conflict is actually worth it. The psychological and physical damage that our people get in combat is less talked about, and I think needs to be raised.
Well, I enjoyed it as usual. Way too much agreement. You and I got to start fighting again.
I'm sure that'll happen next week.
Have a good one. You going skiing?
There's no snow.
Really? Did it start? I thought you said it was snowing like 3 weeks ago. It stopped?
It was. It's gone.
Really?
It's been very warm. So
I hope you guys get it, not us.
Yeah, really.
All right. Jimmy, you want to go right to these guys, Wayne and Andrew? We have them both.
Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
I'm here.
You're here. You're alive. You're well.
I think so.
Well, that's a good thing. You know, we got to sometimes, you know, when you reach a certain age, we got to like text each other in the morning, make sure we're still around, right?
But I remember what George Burns used to say. You know, he wanted to make it to 100, and he did, and then he passed away. But he was in his mid-90s, and they said he was on some talk show. They asked him what his days are like. He says, well, I wake up, and I read the newspaper. I go right to the obituaries, and if I don't see my name, I have breakfast.
God. Didn't Walter Brennan say sort of the same thing? If I don't see my name, I go to work.
Yeah, well, he looks like he was when he was born. He was 85 years old.
Well, you know, I actually read some wacky story about him, and that's how he got. He was a lot younger than he always portrayed, and I guess what happened is I don't know if it was a disease or an accident where he lost a boatload of his teeth.
Oh,
so he could take his false teeth out. And talk like he was, you know, 75 when he was 35.
And I have read he was a terrible racist, so maybe man. That explains how he lost his teeth.
that could be. A lot of that is economic. You know, those guys they're costing us too much. So we're seeing that today, right? Never really changed. You know, I didn't realize this is. You know, you guys get so much better on history. I got this Quora thing the other day about Joe DiMaggio, and in this area here, Chicago, was such a manufacturing center for the war. I mean, one side of my family is straight Italian. My grandfather and grandmother were from Italy. My uncles, none of them was able to go to war because they were. My one was a tool and die maker, and the other one did something. Well, actually, one went to Hawaii in ship repair, but he worked for a company and that he wasn't in the army, so which he didn't get the GI Bill, which unfortunately. So I don't know of anybody here in Chicago. I never heard of anybody being interred or something. Evidently Joe DiMaggio's dad was interred and they took his fishing boat and everything away from him. Somebody got his fishing boat, duh.
There was quite a few when the war broke out. And there probably would have been more had the FBI kept a closer eye on the fascist. There was in the United States in the 30s, there was the Fascist League of North America, which published two big newspapers in Italian out in New York, and they were absolutely pro-Mussolini. Then, of course, there was the German-American Bund, which they were basically Nazis. The funny thing, I had a professor, a history professor in college, Jim Cook, who actually became a brigadier general in the National Guard after I graduated. But he had an Uncle Fritz up in Baltimore. Baltimore was a heavy, heavy German population area, especially Reisterstown. And he said his Uncle Fritz got picked up by the FBI and was put on a bus, and some of you know his family was there to see him off, and the window of the bus was open, and his uncle Fritz put out his right arm and gave a Hitler salute.
Well, I mean, you look at what's happening now in the economy, and people are, like Lou was just talking about, just people don't like what's going on in Washington. They think people are ripping them off. They don't like this. They don't like that. And it's an economic, for the first time, really in our lifetime, you know, the next year isn't better than the year before in our lifetime. Now, so you have all these political, you've got, you know, some people going crazy on the left. You got some people going crazy on the right. I mean, wherever it is, you look in Washington, you got somebody who's a little different. And you look at Chicago, you look at the mayor, and you go, well, what is he doing here? So, I mean, it's on both ends. I can't even imagine, you know, people who think everybody during the 20s and 30s, they were so convinced that our way was the best way and our government and capitalism. No, they weren't. For God's sake, look at the mess we were in. How could you not have questioned our system of government in the Depression?
Oh, absolutely, and you know, and that's why FDR won in a landslide in 32.
But his message was what? It wasn't a message. What was he going to change?
Well, I think people looked at Roosevelt. They knew where he came from. He came from, you know, a wealthy family in New York, and I think a lot of people figured, well, it might take somebody on the inside, and he played up on that too. FDR did. It might take somebody who knows these people to. You know, get him under control. Of course, one of the first things that happened after he was inaugurated was there was a plot to overthrow him by wealthy Wall Street bankers, including George H.W. Bush's father.
I think the history of that family, boy, leads to that would be about as dirty as Epstein, almost in a different way.
Oh, there may be some connections.
I mean,
I don't want to walk all over Andy, but let's just put it this way: we have been on some stories that tend to validate your suspicion.
Well, a lot of it I got from you guys.
Oh, this is what's known as the in the intelligence world, it's called the rattle around effect. Our own stuff is coming back to us.
It's coming back to haunt your two guys' asses. I mean, I didn't know anything about the grandfather and stuff that you guys told me.
Oh yeah, yeah. Jeez,
it's
Prescott.
What did you guys get a chance to talk in on any of the veteran stuff we did last couple?
I did listen in, and I really appreciated the. It's Talia, right?
She was great.
Her comments about the transition when you get out of the military were really spot on. You know, I remembered when I left the Navy active duty. It was rather abrupt, rather fast. And you know, although I had a job lined up, you know, you're there like.
How did you do that? How'd you get the job lined up?
Well, I knew things were getting bad. I was involved in a situation in the 80s where, and this is very apropos of what we're seeing now and regarding the Epstein case, but I had been tasked by Naval Investigative Service, which is now NCIS, and they got these TV shows, and the FBI to investigate my commanding officer, because he was running from Navy housing a child pornography ring, and we did a sting operation on him. But unfortunately, the Navy.
This is before computers. These are actual pictures.
Yeah. Now this is back in the 80s. Yeah, he was taking videos, pictures, and it was a huge ring, and it involved a lot of higher ups. In Washington too. Whoa. But all of us who were involved in the case, I mean, he had a court martial. I testified against him. He got 18 years at hard, supposedly at hard labor in Leavenworth. He didn't do but 18 months there, and sort of like Ghislaine Maxwell. So and then once you get known by certain levels in Washington, your career is pretty much over with. So you know, I you know, was wearing a uniform one day, and then the next day I'm trying to think now, what what suit should I wear? You know, because that's one thing about the military. You don't have to worry about what you're going to wear for the day.
Well, that's what we were trying to do with Hal yesterday. And Andrew piped in. What's the procedure? I mean, Hal said they let him off. I mean, his ship was in Washington. He was on a nuclear cruiser. Because they let me off in Washington. Did they give you a plane ticket or train ticket, a bus ticket?
Well, that happened to me too when I was waiting for orders after this. You know, I testified at this guy's court martial and whatnot. I was waiting for orders to a new command, and they told me to go back to my home of record. Well, I that was where my parents had used to live in South Jersey, and I said, wait a minute, my home of record, someone else lives in that house. I can't really show up at the door and say,
you could have tried it. You might have tried it. Hey, by the way, are my parents still here?
Pardon?
You could have knocked on the door and said, hey, by the way, are anybody I know still here?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. So they said, well, go somewhere, but be close to a telephone, you know. So,
well, I mean, there's no severance pay. I guess you get unemployment after a while, but how do you go get an apartment when we're out of job? Where do you go?
What happened? Also, if you got any leave, they pay you that, and I had the maximum amount of leave, so I think it was 180 days. So I got paid for all that, but you don't get any severance pay, no.
Well, how much were you making?
As a lieutenant in the Navy. I would say back in the early 80s, it was about $45,000 a year.
Okay, so it was something.
Yeah.
All right, so we're enlisted men. Could you go drink with a guy like Andrew with the bars he hangs around with for $45,000 a year?
I got in a lot of trouble with my higher ups. I used to drink with the enlisted guys, yeah.
God.
I found them a lot. They were more fun to hang around with.
Well, I would imagine that.
As a matter of fact, a lot of them thought I was ex-enlisted. I said, no, I'm not really.
God. Well, Andrew, what do you make of all? I mean, it seems like it's interesting. But Talia's job was, for those who weren't listening, they made her. She wanted to learn another language. She ended up learning whatever the Afghan language is, right?
Probably Dari or maybe Pashto.
I think she said it was Pashto, but
yeah.
She was on essentially live during battles, and she's translating the other side's intercepted radio or whatever messages in such a way where people were using it as, okay, those guys are there, we got to go there. And she said the pressure, if she ever made a mistake, like people are dying, wow, it's not the same as missing out on a trade, is it? I mean, I can imagine why she was pretty stressed out. I mean,
yeah, she and I shared the same last duty station. I also was at the National Security Agency of Fort Meade, and that's where I got out. But I wasn't in the language area. I was in the communication security area to prevent other countries from listening in on our communications.
Well, the gentleman was on last Friday, Mike Murphy. He went to, I guess, the language place in Monterey. He was there, and he learned German. And she was, whatever, Pashti or something. But he actually learned German. He was in Europe and did a lot of stuff over there. And I think he was more Africa than Asia. He did his intelligence work was in Africa. It was his area, Europe and Africa, I believe. But, yeah, I mean, it's weird how these stories kind of run together. I mean, Hal was saying that, Andrew, I mean, he said he was 43 days in the Persian Gulf. When the water was 93 degrees and one of the freshwater things on the boat was ship was wrecked, so you couldn't take a shower for 43 days because the place stunk so bad. Down in the steam area where the reactor was, 140 degrees. He said, if the water wasn't so warm, I would have jumped in and tried to swim home.
Yeah, I felt like that when I was once on a ship in the North Atlantic in a. It was a minesweeper. This one was made from wood. You know,
they're all made from wood, right?
Yeah, and we were in a storm so bad, everyone was seasick, including the captain. And you know, that's where you just want to like jump overboard and end it all.
Well, you know where those things were? A lot of those things were made. We used to go. We used to go on vacation in Sturgeon Bay, and there was an outfit there, Peterson Shipbuilders, and they made they made minesweepers. And then we'd go buy one. I'm going. I was a little kid, and I go, "The thing's all wood." And he goes, "Yeah, they're all wood."
Yeah.
God, yeah. How long does it take to build one of those things? For God's sake.
Well, this the one I was on was actually built during World War II, and but you know the one thing, because they're wood, when you hit rough seas, they bob around like a cork, and
God,
it's not good.
Well, Andrew, what do you make all this, buddy?
I'm learning. I'm silent because we don't know where these shows are going each week, Tom, but. Whatever it is, Wayne seems to have stories that are apt for the moment.
Well, Wayne's driving us.
you posed the questions, and he came up with the personal histories.
Well, the idea is we like to kind of string some themes together. What did you guys make of the thing last night at the White House? I mean, Lou's probably right. This has happened in other administrations, but. Yesterday people are talking about, gee, the Dow was up because three stocks were to the moon and all three people were invited to the White House. Well, actually, Goldman was up 30 and J.P. Morgan's in the Dow. He was invited. I'm trying to think if anybody else here was invited. But
I think with the trouble Trump is in right now, I wouldn't want my picture taken alongside of him.
What? Do you think it's any kind of trouble?
Andy and I haven't really had a chance to talk since more emails have come out from the Epstein estate. But now apparently it turns out that Trump and Epstein in 2017, Trump's first year in office, his first Thanksgiving in office, they spent Thanksgiving together. Now, it was only it was only about a month later we were on our way up to Connecticut to investigate a case involving Epstein and Trump, but we had no idea that they had just spent Thanksgiving together in Florida.
Well,
no, we didn't. It here's one of the things that, I mean, big picture. Wayne and I think, and have for at least 8 years that we've been talking about this. It's much worse than anybody thinks. But when you get to the details, normal people kind of turn off. So we often don't do it because people say, well, it can't be bad. I mean, it can't be. Yeah.
And I think it's bad. But what
do you... So now we're seeing, the other... shoe trap.
You guys ran a couple times during the whole mess with when Trump wasn't in office, and everybody seemed to come at him, and if the Democrats could have had any kind of discipline and said here's something the guy really did bad, which probably were a few things, and we're going to actually prosecute him on him, and we're going to make sense. We're not going to make it a news show, and we're going to win, or we're going to do something. I don't know whether you win or don't win in court. I wouldn't exactly call it that, but instead of having three or four different things going, where it just looked to everybody like, "What are you doing?" And even me, who've never been a fan of the guy, said, "I don't care who you are. The government doesn't get to run up a $40 or $50 million bill just because they don't like you." And by the way, they don't even succeed on a few of them. I mean, nobody gets to do that. I mean, I think we all have felt that. I thought he never went to the island. I thought he was probably more involved in the House in New York than was shown. I mean, that was always my suspicion, but I have no proof. But at this point, it's a lot of people have said it's water under the dam, and now the water is a little dirtier. Is it still water under the dam, I guess is my question.
Well, I don't know. I see this now. It's almost like the drip that went on during the Watergate scandal, every day there were new revelations, which, you know, basically sealed Nixon's fate. And I'm seeing the same thing play out because we now have emails sent. So there's a former New York Times reporter who Epstein was sending these emails to, and he wrote that original article where he quoted Trump telling him, "Oh yeah, Jeff, he has a lot of, he hangs around a lot of girls over his place, and you know, some of them are said to be pretty young," or something to that effect. Anyway, this New York Times reporter, and the name escapes me right now, he's no longer with the Times, but he seems like he was part of that whole ring. And a couple of the emails that Epstein sends to him, Epstein is complaining how bad a person Trump is.
Was that because, is that because he screwed him on the
there's
wait, let me interject. Are you talking about Michael Wolff? I think he's a
no. No, it's a different guy, and I just the stuff is coming out so fast and furious right now. I haven't had it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think there's anybody who doesn't. I don't. This whole Epstein stuff to me is so above my pay grade. I can't even. Man, I don't know. I'm way too much of a Southside Catholic. What can I tell you? When I saw the picture of Trump and all these guys, it's just a beauty pageant, sitting there drinking. Well, he's not a drinker, but to this big table in their tuxedos, and these girls walking by in their leotards parading in front of these guys. They're like 14. I go, I mean, nobody touching anybody. There's nobody naked or anything. I'm going, God, it's so creepy, I can't go there. But it was also, you know, stuff was 20 years ago. I mean, I guess, does a little more, okay, he's a little bigger of a pervert than we thought he was. I don't know if that changes anybody's mind here, does it?
Well, first of all, whoever these people are who say, well, it's just a little more, it's old.
I didn't say I agree with them.
But whoever they are, it's more and more people, I think, and certainly I feel this way, is do you have no standards whatsoever of what's acceptable behavior?
The answer might be 20 years ago or 30.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about people who raise that stuff, because it's not both sides. It's a little worse than we might have thought. It's proof positive that the president is one of the most despicable people we could ever elected to any significant office. And that is manifest in other ways, but the reason that this is important is almost nobody who's not a pervert advocates for perverts.
I'm not trying to be argumentative, but I'm trying to draw knowledge. There are odd times. I mean, let's put it this way. None of us are going to have a drink with the guy ever, even if he wanted to. We don't want to be in the same room with him. I don't.
He doesn't even drink.
I know. I'm saying there are times when you have huge economic problems, and some people think we do. And there are times during war where if your kid's there, you want the general in charge as the best general. You really don't care if he's a pervert. We find out now that, you know, I'm not going to slur the dude, but Eisenhower might have had an affair with his aide, or what do they call the lady who was his chief of staff, or whatever.
Oh, his driver.
Yeah. Now, if you think that your kid came through World War II because Eisenhower was the best general, and you find out 10 years later he really had four people he was doing, does it really matter to you? I mean, if you think that there's a reason, there's some sort of skill set there that you need. I happen to think he doesn't have the skill set other people do. But if you think somehow he's the savior for your job, this economy, this world order, and I would debate that, but if you do, does it really matter to you? I mean,
obviously some people feel that way, and it's a significant percentage even now, according to polling. But to compare what Eisenhower alleged situations. And Wayne and I investigate all of that stuff. We could name the names, but there's no point at this point. But we're talking about an actual pervert, a trafficker, and someone who's currently protecting Maxwell and other perverts. You know, Wayne just sent me today, without knowing how that this would come up on the show, something about an Alaska federal judge who was just...
Judge, his name is Judge Kindred, as in a kindred spirit.
And he was just, tell the story, I didn't get beyond the paintball
Wayne. I tell you, well, he had inappropriate contact with two of his staffers. They don't say whether they're male or female, but the Ninth Circuit had a Ninth Circuit decided, no, this guy violated all kinds of rules and regulations, and they got him to resign, and the Alaska Supreme Court disbarred him. So it had to be pretty bad stuff.
So it was just today. He's a Trump appointee for the first term, and this is pretty quick justice to lose your lifetime appointment.
Yeah, that was pretty quick, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty
quick. I hadn't even heard of the guy, and I'm like, and his name is Kindred?
Kindred spirits of Trump, Wayne writes. Look, we got all of these appointees, including the Secretary of Defense. What's his qualification? Well, he's a total loyalist, but what's his background? Sexually harassing people. You know, and he got Acosta, the U.S. Labor Secretary, as soon as he was nominated. I've told this story on the show before, but the day he was nominated, Wayne was here in Washington, and we said, what the hell? This is the guy who did the sweetheart deal for Epstein. And Wayne, beginning the next day, started a 3-day series about how bad Acosta was.
Here, people wonder, why did Trump put him in as labor secretary of all things, right? He didn't have a background in labor or anything. Well, it turns out that the Labor Department is actually in charge of monitoring international human trafficking, including the sex trafficking of minors. Now, why it's in labor, I guess because a lot of traffickers are, you know, using people, you know, basically like slave laborers, you know, they're not getting paid or paid very little.
You know what else is in there is the rules on like IRAs and stuff.
Yeah.
Which is pretty crazy.
Well, but, you know, so this guy, Acosta, he's labor secretary. But we knew he was involved in cover-ups of international banking. We'll get back to the stocks and jacks themes here of the show, because it's intertwined. And one of the elements of the Epstein saga that some of us, and there's, you know, a half dozen of us who used to be exchanging tips frequently by email about this going back about 8 years, but this involves international finance. And once people get involved in peeling back beyond the headlines, beyond even some of the mainstream news accounts, you realize it's not just a couple of big-time perverts. There's a network here of money, and the money, the perversions, the trafficking, they involve not just businesses that you might think are relevant, like modeling and beauty contests and casinos, but on another level, the banks that help finance and launder this stuff. And I'll just toss this out.
We have to go to break, but you guys, I want you to continue this afterward, because it was like 3 shows ago, you guys were talking about went back on the really the money that was behind the Epstein thing, and that and the people and the power and the maybe the FBI. SP futures down 13. Nasdaq futures down 50. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right now.
We're back. Welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Allen. Jim Lawler on the board. SP futures down 17. NASDAQ futures down 70. Goldman Sachs, which was up $30 yesterday, and its way to the White House is down 29 cents today. So whatever people thought was going to happen must have happened, whatever it was. Dow's down 99 over in Europe. We'll be quick here. Europe. DAX down 130. Again, everybody was up huge yesterday. Well, over there they were, not here so much here. DAX down 0.5%. The FTSE down 78. That's 0.8%. CAC round's actually up 33.4%. So kind of mixed a little down in the Euro, not very much. Over in the Nikkei up 218.4%. Hang Seng up 150.5. Shanghai up 29.7. So generally higher in Asia as well. We've got bonds up 2 basis points, 4.10. And again, the 10-year is about the same spot it was when we went down before we dropped the two had the two droppings by the Fed, and I'm going to bet that if they drop again in December, I'm going to say it's not going to be any down at all. So this inflation is starting to rear its ugly head a little bit. Oil up 56 cents, but 59.04 under 60. Oil is not causing any problems here. It's $60 a barrel. Brent up 57 cents, 63.28. Gold, which has been absolutely on a tear, it's up another $24 today, 42.38. We're chasing it a little bit. We had sold some calls, and now we're trying to get them back. Silver up 19 cents, 53.65. We didn't sell anything there. It's been a big, big winner for our clients. Foreign Exchange, 116, so the dollar's a little weaker than it was yesterday. British Pound, 130.166. Again, those are a little stronger, the dollar a little weaker, but not much. Crypto, up 753, 102.369. Jimmy, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, Bulls sucked.
Unfortunately, the Bulls do. They lost last night to the Pistons, 124-113. The Magic also beat the Knicks. And tonight we have the Jets versus the Patriots. It is 7:34 in Chicago. It is 37 degrees with a high of 54. In Phoenix right now, we are looking at, 63 degrees with a high of 88. In traffic right now, we are looking at the inbound on the Kennedy from Montrose is 27 minutes inbound. On the Edens from Lake Cook to the Jane Byrne Exchange is 43 minutes. On the Eisenhower, inbound from Wolf is 45 minutes. The Dan Ryan is inbound from 95th to the Jane Byrne is 31 minutes. And back to you, Chief.
Guys, what Jimmy could have done there is he could have dug into our best sports report ever. From were you guys ever around when Angelica was on the board? She was hysterical. She had the Ukrainian accent. just a lovely young lady. So,
well, I believe I remember, yeah.
And she was on one day, and she goes, "Bulls lose to Pistons. Who cares? All they do is lose." That was her sports report. And she goes, then she goes, "What's a piston anyway?" And I go, "Like it, it's a piston. It's a part of a car. Why would anybody name a team over that?" I said, "Well, Detroit's the Motor City." "Well, so what? All they do is lose." That was our sports report. A little more on a serious note, she sent me pictures of her hospital where she was born in and school she went to school in over in Ukraine, and they are loads of bricks on the streets.
Oh my!
Yeah, just yeah. She got her mother out of there. But anyway, and let's continue on. You know, it's funny, we have this on again, off again view of the world, and you guys, I'm not telling you anything. I mean, we don't, when you hire a football coach, this years ago, some guy gets fired from some place for breaking all these rules, and you know, he spends his 2 years, you know, doing absolution somewhere. All of a sudden, somebody hires him again, and one of my buddies on the trading floor, Beldo, who's kind of a nut job but a nice guy. I go, "Bella, what do they hire this guy for?" He goes, "Tommy, he doesn't care about the rules. He wins. He's just a coach." And I go, "Okay, then." Now, there's a point of view. A lot of what you guys are talking about, these points of views go back and forth, right? Do we really care if somebody's this? Do we really not? If he's going to do this for me, do we really care if he's a scumbag or not? I mean, I think you get in trouble doing that. I'm with you guys. Even though I may sound like I'm arguing with you, I'm absolutely on your page that a leopard doesn't change his spots. That if somebody's a crook, he's going to be a crook someday when you really need him. And if he's not, he's not. But it's,
yeah. By the way, I looked up the name of that New York Times, former New York Times reporter. But when he was with the New York Times, he was emailing Epstein quite frequently. Turns out the guy's name is Landon Thomas, and he was the New York Times finance reporter. So. There we go.
But how much was it when you guys went through a few weeks ago, the whole history of, I think you said it started pretty much with Maxwell's dad, right?
Yeah, Robert Maxwell was some people call him a triple agent. He died a suspicious death on his yacht off the Canary Islands. The funeral was in Israel, and he's buried in sort of the cemetery for Israeli heroes in Jerusalem.
Really?
Yeah. He was born in Czechoslovakia, though. He had apparently some links with MI6 during World War II, and then he became quite well known. And you know, he was a billionaire too. He bought up a lot of publishing houses, including publishing houses that printed communist stuff after the fall of the Berlin Wall and Glasnost in Soviet Union. He started buying up all these communist country printing presses.
Andrew, didn't you say, though, when all was said and done, when he died, the alleged billionaire didn't have any money?
Right. He was well over $1 billion in debt. And of course, the yacht that he died on was named after his favorite child.
The lady, yeah, Lady Ghislaine.
One way to think about this, and you know, it's it deserves more thorough examination and authentication than I can provide now, but is to think of not just the evil Epstein and his consort Maxwell, but that they're part of a larger network that preceded them, and we got to worry continues on, and that she, with the link to her father, think of what she would have known, and to help Epstein go from being a school teacher dismissed without a college degree and so forth to become a man who leaves a $600 million estate. And these are the type of things that when we talk about the Epstein files, It's not just who's named and who did what, but these kinds of relationships that are part of the reason that they were suppressed.
Well, I get this odd feeling. Let me see if I can explain it properly. You guys are so much better at this than me. Is you look at it, if you're just a regular, I won't say a regular schmuck, a regular person has a real life, not that we don't, you look at this bunch of perversions and little girls and you go, God, these guys are just, you know, assholes or whatever. But if you look at it from the, what you guys are bringing out, this is a two or three generational money sort of influence thing where this last 20 years we're talking about is just the last link of a real long chain.
Oh, exactly.
Oh, absolutely. And I used to, when I was in Washington, it seemed like every 10 years there was another like huge sex scandal that would break out, always on Capitol Hill. And Andy knows that, you know, what happened like at the end of the 70s. And then you wait another 10 years or so, and here's another one breaking out. It had to do with the congressional pages and the Bush administration and journalists and politicians. And then you go another 10 years and there's another scandal breaks out with Dennis Hastert, Mark Foley, Republican congressman from Florida, and you know, so it's almost like clockwork. When a scandal would break out, you know, I'd say, oh, it's been 10 years, okay.
Well, this seems way more than a scandal.
This is an ongoing thing, and one of the other emails that just came out was Epstein emailing the former Secretary General of the Council of Europe, former Norwegian Prime Minister named Jagland, and here's Epstein asking him to open up a channel to Vladimir Putin and Sergei Lavrov in Russia. Epstein wanted to deal with him directly, and this is the same time that Epstein is obviously still on good terms with Trump, because they celebrated Thanksgiving together in 2017, and then of course Epstein died in the federal correction center in Manhattan in 2019, and you know, Trump's president.
I'm getting the odd feeling here that the young girl piece of this is about 20% of the story.
I think you may be right. And also, some other emails from Epstein are to Peter Thiel, who, and they're like, we spent such a great time together. And, well, Peter Thiel is a gay guy. So what in the world, what good times was he having with Epstein, who liked, you know, young girls?
You got to cater to both sides these days.
You said I was going to go there. Epstein handled both pre-versions for.
I told you a story about my guys that I meet on Wednesday night. These older judges and attorneys, that half of them are retired, and one of the guys was just telling some story about they used to have something they called a whore court in Chicago, where they pick up all the streetwalkers, right? And every night, everybody knew everybody because you pick up the same people every night, right? So, on one side, there were the ladies looking for the ladies. On the other side, there were the guys looking for the guys. And in the middle were the guys that, like, people that kind of couldn't decide. So
where the median, they were in the median strip.
So the judge goes, all right, well, book everybody. The bailiff says, well, where do I put the people in the middle? He goes, well, if they're snipped, send them with the girls. If they're not, send them with the guys. You couldn't write fiction like this.
Sounds like something out of a Joseph Wambaugh novel.
But, you know, Andrew, he doesn't have to answer if it's going to incriminate him. Evidently, Chicago had a gallows here up until not that long ago. Because you guys probably know this, some Irish guy, evidently when he was in his 20s, got sentenced to hang. And then the guy escaped Ireland and they couldn't find him. So if they ever caught him, because he was sentenced to hang, they had to have a gallows. So the gallows hung in there, I'm going to say 15, 20 years ago, maybe a little longer. So finally they said, the guy's got to be dead, right? So they took the gallows apart, and all these attorneys wanted a sliver of wood from the gallows so they could put it up on their wall in a picture. Andrew, would you want one of those?
I don't think so, but a couple shows ago, I was talking about how Ben Heck, the great Chicago-born, Chicago-based writer a century ago, was talking about how you could hire Clarence Darrow for $35 to get you off on a murder case. But his your story reminds me of the other part of the story, which was one of his antagonists was a prosecutor named Ropes O'Brien. And every time Darrow would win, Ropes O'Brien would feel that the hangman was cheated.
Well, if this whole saga, and I won't just say Epstein because it started way before him, if this whole saga involves, two or three, CIA type places, secret services, all these different governmental people, it's not the first one in humanity's lifetime. Has any one of these things ever been prosecuted successfully where somebody actually really found out the whole story and made amends? And I mean, we see the prince getting tossed in Britain. They must have a feel for what's going on over in their area, or did.
Oh, I have a feeling that King Charles has probably seen Epstein files that we haven't seen yet. Or maybe we're seeing them now, but I think King Charles... You know, MI6 obviously is a very good intelligence agency. That's who James Bond was working for. It's called the Secret Intelligence Service. Been around for a long time.
Bill Stevenson, wasn't he? Bill Stevenson was a leader, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have a funny feeling that they could have gotten their hands on the Epstein, so-called Epstein files. You know, Epstein files, it's not like a file. People, it's just a bunch of information that has not been released yet.
Tens of thousands of emails,
yes.
Plus photos.
And videotapes.
And where I think Wayne is going with this is, because we've talked about it privately, that MI6's sources in the U.S. said, you better be prepared for much worse than you think. And that's why they got rid of Prince Andrew's last kind of privileges.
What's the guy supposed to do? Go out and get a job?
Well he still gets a $600,000 a year stipend or whatever that is in pounds from the purse, the royal purse. So he's not going to be hurting.
No, but again, what was it, about 2 weeks ago, suddenly he's out. Well, Wayne thinks they got the heads up that
I
you got to get rid of this guy.
Buckingham Palace has all sorts of, there's all sorts of jobs there that you really wouldn't think exist. One of which is a guy who does liaison with British intelligence. Nice cushy job to have, but I guess when the king or queen beckons you to get something, you start making phone calls or meeting people, saying, "Hey, we need to get the goods on this."
Well, if all these people from all these different countries are landing in a place and paying huge money to mess around with girls or guys or whatever the hell they were doing, I have to believe that every one of these intelligence agencies is damn near interested. Is MI6 clean? Are they clean?
Epstein carried a Saudi Arabian passport.
How do you get one of those?
Yeah, and for what purpose? But we do know that the Saudi royal family has some bizarre peccadilloes also. And so was he carrying a Saudi passport in case, he got in trouble over here, he could just... have gone over to Saudi Arabia with no questions asked.
I don't know who in Britain has, well, it's not the king, I don't think, but I mean, if you're president and or whatever they are over there, prime minister, and MI6 comes in with this report, you got to ask them, where were you guys in all this? I mean, don't you? I mean, well, you knew nothing about it, or did you have a camera on the wall like everybody else?
Or were they involved in the same? Were they actually using the Epstein network for their own purposes?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
exactly. I'm actually writing yet another book, and it gets into all that type of thing. And I think what's happening is because, intelligence agencies say, oh, it's so much cheaper to just give a guy or a woman a computer terminal, and then they can just do all their espionage from a computer terminal. You can't. The reason why James Bond used to hang around casinos drinking vodka martini shaken not stirred, and why he hung around these opulent hotels poolside in these tropical paradises, is that's how you pick up intelligence. That's it's not sitting there in a computer terminal.
Weren't all the people in World War II that did the USO tours, weren't they all tied in, because they all hung around the hotel bars?
Yeah, exactly. I mean I think of my own career even before I became full-time journalist. I'd pick up all kinds of information at hotel bars, for example.
Oh, Andrew did the same thing in coffee shops and churches, right?
Yeah, we don't. especially in churches.
Yeah.
Well, one of the spy hangouts that Wayne initially investigated for his forthcoming book, actually, we've been to a number of them, but I said, that place, that's a boring place. You're not going to sell any copies.
That's a place that, and it's, I think you're talking about the place right across the street from you.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Wayne took it out of his book. I said,
yeah, I took it out.
I think there's, you better have a pretty good looking
type
on your cover. You're not going to sell any copies.
I was going to say they were hanging around here because they're spying on you, Andy, but.
I'm always a guy who asks the stupid logistics question. I remember when James Bond from Russia with Love thought there was a tape in there. He said, this room won't do, and he ended up in the bridal suite or whatever. But now, if you walk into Epstein's place down there, are there four cameras on the wall, or do they share the camera?
Yeah, the place up in New York apparently had cameras and microphones all through this townhouse in the Upper East Side, and under the staircase sometimes you find a little door there, where there's a storage area under the staircase. Apparently in that door under the staircase, a staircase was a basically a control room that handled all the cameras. God. And mics.
Including bathrooms and by the way, it needs to be said that while we're talking about this stuff going on here in our own beloved country, that to get to your point, Chief, this has been going on for all over the place, and Russia and other places like that go way beyond what we're talking about, so it's not just here, but here is what we need to care about.
What is it with these people, these in power? Wasn't Hermann Göring like the biggest pervert ever? What's the connection between this power and being a pervert?
It's power. It's this thought that you can get away, if you're powerful, you can get away with everything. So as far, I've read a lot of psychiatrists look at these people and say, it's not sexual gratification or getting, it's the power trip.
Well, it can't be. How can it be fun?
Yeah, no. I mean, it can't be. Absolutely.
To do things that would be termination for in any possible meaning for most people adds to the risk that if people, and that, let's get to the underage part or other perversions to do things that you know would be abhorrent and get away with it decade after decade, that's fun for these people.
Yeah, I mean, if you were, if you're in Washington and you're 45 years old and you're not married and whatever, you like to have companionship, why don't you find somebody else who's 45 years old in the same boat you are and have a date? I mean, what's nothing that's there's nothing wrong. What do you got to go down these other roads for? I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, it's.
I mean, the idea. I think I'll go find myself a 16-year-old tonight. Why would anybody even go there?
Well, some are married, but.
Well, that's another thing. Yeah, but.
I also just for the a balance. Some people are set up, and they get involved by being set up, and then they just go along with it because they feel that they're trapped.
How could anybody have ever? If you're some guy from Saudi, I don't care how much money you have. How could you ever trust this Epstein guy?
Well, if you're into the same sort of, you have the same sort of interests, you're not necessarily trusting Epstein, but Epstein may be arranging to get arranging for the Saudis to get young traffic girls from, some small town in New Mexico.
But you're a public figure. People are depending on you.
Who is?
I'm saying it. I was elected to the board of the CBOE way back in the day, and not that I was ever a guy chasing girls on the floor, and there were plenty of those, and plenty of girls who wanted to be chased. So, but the idea of ever doing something that would embarrass the people who voted for me, I couldn't think of doing something like that. These guys don't seem to care.
Yeah, and you know, when Andy and I went up to Waterbury, Connecticut, on an Epstein Trump lead at the end of 2017. Neither of us realized. I knew, Waterbury rang a bell, but then when I looked, the mayor of Waterbury was this Republican politician who was seeking higher office, maybe thinking about going for U.S. Senate. This guy Phil Giordano, when he was a mayor, he was basically having people bring young girls into the mayor's office. I mean, I'm talking 7 and 8 years old.
I can't even go there.
He's in prison.
Yeah, he's got like a basically almost a life term in prison. But being as he's a Republican, I'm just hoping he's not on Trump's commutation or pardon list.
Hey, Andrew, by the way, go ahead. Sorry,
I might have a. A job for you. A lady who was on the show a couple of times, Katie Mather, did a lot of research on some drugs and so forth, orphan drugs, and now she's actually in the PA physician's assistant, and she was accepted to, I think, Yale and Cornell. And I said, boy, I got a guy. Maybe we want to talk you into going to Cornell. So might be hitting you up. Would you...
Oh, sure.
I have to believe that you're a big fan of that.
Yeah, I'd love to talk with.
And I think you're probably like Thurston Howell and Gilligan's Island. He was a Yale man. We don't want him. Remember that?
I like them both, but when they play football, I root for Cornell.
Yeah, remember that, how he couldn't stand anybody from Yale? I don't know what the
Yeah.
He was a Harvard guy, right? Yeah. So what do you guys right? Are you still doing the Comey thing, Andrew, or is that dead for a while?
Yeah, I'm trying to decide. They've got a big hearing an hour from now in Alexandria, and I'm trying to decide whether to scoot over that to that. But I also have an IT person coming to my place, I think, around then. So. It's a tough decision, but the Comey hearing, that is really big stuff and very interesting.
What's you think that's going to blow back, or how's that going to end? Do you have any idea?
Well, the case and the James case are going to be, they're going nowhere. They got huge problems, both procedurally and in terms of evidence. So this kind of pretrial hearing is very important because these things could be the end of the case, but even if by some miracle it got to a jury, there's close to zero chance that either one would be convicted.
What do you make of where this tariff thing is going?
Well, the pressure is on the Supreme Court. I know we're at the end of the show, so I'll...
Well, go ahead. We go on a minute or two. We start a little late.
Well, I think it's fairly clear that Trump doesn't have the power, according to most traditional analysis of the law. But you got a lot of people on the court who like him, but this may be a bridge too far because it really affects the economy. And, there's some subsidiary arguments. Well, how do you make people whole and so forth?
You know, and I don't see how, even though I think he's totally wrong with these tariffs, I would never try and give the money back. How the hell are you going to do that? You bought something at Walmart, they paid a 50-cent tariff on, you're getting a check for 50 cents.
He may want to send everyone a check like he did during COVID with his, you know, he wanted his signature on it, of course. They couldn't do that, but...
They have a way. They could make it prospective only, but...
What do you think of his attorney?
I don't try to predict. It's just very tough for them.
What do you think of the Trump attorney? I think the guy sounds like an idiot half the time. I've listened to a few of his things.
Oh, it's John Sauer, the Solicitor General.
Yeah.
He sounds like he went to the same...
I guess we're dashing. Yeah, he said if you don't want to pay tariffs, just don't buy anything, and then it's not a tax or something like that. You hear that part?
Yeah, he went to the same voice coach as RFK Jr.
God.
You know, I mean, what is it with this guy?
Well, Wayne, good to have you back, buddy. Yeah, although Andrew did a nice job last week, we covered you, but it's more fun with the Bodie, as they say in the South Side. SP Futures down 24, NASDAQ Futures at 122. Sounds like you have a lot of stuff to talk about next week, Andrew, for God's sake, with all this stuff going on. I hope you make it to the Comey thing. That'll be fun.
Thank you.
All right. Jimmy, nice job. Back tomorrow.
That's all, folks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders,